Yeah, hello, hello. You guys pumped?
Oh, I'm pumped.
I'm pumped as well.
Yeah, everybody's pumped. All right, woo. So this is number 10. This is Big Planet Podcast number 10.
Thanks. Special anniversary episode.
Happy anniversary to us.
Yay!
So I'm Kevin.
I'm Nick Boogaloo Shrimply Appis.
Can't top that. I'm just Jared.
He's just Jared. Yeah, that's okay, though. So, yeah, this is a Big Planet the Big Planet Comics podcast.
Or Pondcast.
Yeah, the Pondcast.
Straight from Kevin's Pond.
Well, it's the Pogcast. We're going to talk all about Pogs tonight.
Yay. Oh, the Pogcast.
Yeah. No, so, yeah, let's see. You can subscribe to on iTunes. You can listen to this on our webpage, bigplanetcomics.com.
You could do both.
You could do both. You could also, what else can you do? You can send us an email at podcast@bigplanetcomics.com if you have any questions or suggestions, things like that.
And then we'll talk about you on our next podcast.
And I think that's pretty much everything you can do. Yeah. All right, let's get right into this thing. Let's do some news. Yeah, here we go.
This just in.
So not a lot of news this week, but this one I thought was pretty funny. So they've announced 2 second printings this week, Severed and Infinite.
Awesome. Both deserve it.
So I just thought...
Wait, Infinite what?
Just Infinite.
Oh.
Yeah, so Severed was really good. That was the Scott Snyder book that came out, the horror book.
It was awesome.
And Infinite was really terrible. That was the Robert Kirkman, Rob Liefeld thing.
It was awesome.
Is awesome.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about these books last week, but the sort of...
Duality of man.
Yeah, the dichotomy between those two books of the one being so incredible and the one being really terrible. I just thought that was worth mentioning.
Yeah.
Image wins in both cases.
It's true. So... What else we got? Non-player. You guys know Non-player. Jared, why don't you tell people what Non-player is?
Non-player is by... What's the guy's name? Anybody?
Something or other.
Some new guy.
Nate
Simpson, who is an amazing animator-style guy who did this first comic, and it is fantastic in a kind of virtual reality world of the future with really fantastic art.
Cool. True. Yeah, and they're making it into a movie.
Really? Already? There's only one issue.
Yeah, there's one issue.
He's only done one issue. He hasn't even announced the second issue.
He probably won't do a second. The movie will probably come out before he does a second issue.
I think it's because the second issue is going to take him 100 years. If you guys have seen Non-Player, the art is so detailed. It's like
that's true.
It's like Jeff Darrow mixed with James Stokoe, mixed with Seth Fisher, mixed with even more detailed than all those things.
Mixed with Jesus Christ.
That makes me want to read Non-Player.
So all I know about this is it's being produced by the people that produce the Harry Potter movies. So I'm assuming it's going to
have... Which Harry Potter movie?
I know at least the last one.
Oh.
The Deathly Hallows Part 2. The one that doesn't have a lot of camping in it.
Who's Harry Potter?
Harry Potter,
he's a young Indian hero.
Yeah.
Like from India?
Yeah. That's Harry Potter.
Oh, man. Get them all wrong.
Oh, God, Harry Potter is so good.
Yeah, is it?
Yeah.
There's also like a crappy Harry Potter comic.
Really?
Yeah, it's called
Harry Potty and the Mystery of the Butt or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
Something stupid.
Oh, that's stupid.
It's really terrible.
Comic.
But we're not going to talk about this tonight.
No.
Let's talk about something good.
But I think it's cool that they're making Non-Player into a movie. I think it'll be awesome. If you guys read the comic, and we have... Yeah,
I think it'll work really well as a film, actually.
Yeah. I think it could be cool. So, that's all. So, a couple other things. There were some photos that leaked from some movies, or one was released officially, but let's talk about each of these. You guys ready?
Sure.
First, we'll talk about Henry Cavill as Superman. They showed the picture of Superman from the Zack Snyder movie.
Yeah, he's like, I am Superman.
It's more like,
or this is Superman?
I am Spider-Man holding up a big pile of wreckage.
Yeah, he does have the suit that looks like it's made out of basketballs like Spider-Man.
Oh, that's true from the movies. Yeah, it looks like his logo was kind of like a big piece of rubber that was ironed onto his shirt.
Yeah, I mean, it looks better than the Tim Burton, Nicolas Cage Superman costume.
Hell no, it doesn't.
It's not as iridescent.
Yeah. Also, a lot of people complain that he's got a lot of hair in this picture.
Like on his head?
Yeah, like way too much hair.
Really?
I'm like, really? Who cares?
Yeah, he does have a lot of hair.
I wish I went with the mullet Superman from the 90s.
I wish he had more. I wish he had more hair. I wish he had like... really long hair like Rick Wakeman from Yes.
Like Alice Cooper.
Yeah, or like Alice Cooper.
Maybe a beard too.
The lady that used to live down the street from me, Alice Cooper. Yeah, I think it looks crappy though. It looks like an action figure to me. I just don't like Zack Snyder movies though, so I'm predisposed to not like it.
Wait, these Zack Snyder?
If you guys don't know who Zack Snyder is, he directed 300 and Watchmen and Sucker Punch and Legends of the Guardians, the Owls of Gahool.
Whatever.
I had blanked out that he was doing Superman somehow.
Yeah,
I just
so
didn't care.
Yeah, so we'll see. It's probably gonna have a lot of slow motion and stuff.
And Lawrence Fishburne is in it as Perry White.
Yeah, which was very that was very controversial. Yeah, they announced that
as
Lawrence Fishburne.
Barry White?
As Barry White.
That'd be amazing.
He's like, hello, Superman. Let's save some ladies.
But they announced that that Lawrence Fishburne is gonna be playing Perry White, and this was in this whole week where like racism in comics was like this big huge thing. And I guess there was like a Twitter war that had Scott Lobdell in it.
Really? Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Ron Mars came out and he was like, he put this thing on his Twitter. It said worst week ever. And like, it was a quote from racists.
Oh, wow.
And Scott Lobdell was like, why don't you shut your mouth?
What?
Yeah. But Scott Lobdell, I'm not saying he's a racist. I mean, he came out and he was like, look, I was just in a bad mood and I was tired of like sort of the generalizing that people are making and stuff like that. But still, it seemed like a weird thing to come out against.
Yeah.
He's like, Scott Lobdell was like, oh, you know, racists are bad. It's like shooting fish in a barrel. And Ron Mars was like, well, some fish should be shot.
And if they're in a barrel, it's really easy to do. So why don't we do it?
Yeah. So not a win for Scott Lobdell on that.
Wait. So what racist was he mentioning?
Well, they were talking about all the people, of course.
This is just in reference to people who were talking.
Yeah, because they had announced Lawrence Fishburne as Perry White, and they had announced the comic had come out with the Latino Black Spider-Man.
Oh, so it was like in reference to people complaining about those things.
Yeah, nice. I guess. But anyway,
classy.
Yeah, classy for sure. But anyway, so. I guess they're friends. They've
clearly,
yeah,
sound very friendly.
They've mended fences and things like that. But all right, so moving on. That was Henry Cavill as Superman. So moving
clearly,
on.
Clearly, that was a good discussion.
Anne Hathaway as Catwoman. I knew you guys saw that.
Va 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 boom.
I was gonna go round.
Yeah.
Ooga.
I don't think this is the picture they showed. She's like riding on a motorcycle and she's wearing like goggles or something. I don't really think it's a picture of Catwoman so much.
No, it's just a picture of Anne Hathaway on a motorcycle.
I don't know. The thing is, I feel it is like the more modern, updated Brubaker style Catwoman where she's, I'm a cat burglar. I'm going to dress in an effective suit so I can climb over stuff and have like high tech goggles. And it seems like a cat thief kind of look to her. I don't think it's that bad.
Like in The Great Muppet Caper.
Yeah,
exactly.
All right. And then they showed Tom Hardy as Bane.
Bane.
Yeah, Bane.
That was his line from Batman and Robin, right?
Was it?
Yeah. He was in Batman and Robin?
Yeah,
yeah, he was.
His only line was Bane.
Wait, is that his only word, or did he repeat that line over and over?
He might have said it a couple times, but he definitely didn't say anything else.
Yeah. In Batman and Robin, too, he looked like he was wearing a suit that was, like, inflated.
Yeah.
It looked like one of those sumo wrestler suits that people wear when they go on, like, office retreats.
This looks better.
Yeah, not as much team building, the new one.
Yeah, no.
He has a crazy mask, though. It's weird looking.
But, yeah, he's got a weird like gas mask or something.
You know, it's a Christopher Nolan Batman movie. It'll probably be all right.
I'm assuming he's like inhaling gas or Venom gas or something. I don't know.
Well, that's what Venom does, right?
Yeah.
Well, Bane. Yeah. Bane uses Venom.
He uses that Venom drug. Yeah.
And really? Spider-Man is the Bane of Venom. Yeah. That's what I always get.
Wait, what?
Up. Yeah, anyway. So that's pretty much it for news. Did you guys hear any exciting news this week?
No, I'm still excited about the William Sonoma Spider-Man like cookie sheets and stuff.
Yeah, I hope you guys all saw the Batrock the Leaper vegetable scrubber that was up on the webpage. You guys should definitely order a bunch of those.
I actually wanted to get one. It looked fantastic.
It does look awesome. Well, it was sculpted by Randy Bowen.
I really want the Iron Man cupcake molds or whatever. Those look really good.
Is that a real thing?
Yeah.
So you actually did a little bit of research on the William Sonoma stuff. That's really funny.
That sounds really cool.
That's it for news this week. I guess we should move on to a little viewer mail. What do you guys think?
Nah, whatever.
We got some.
Viewer mail. I feel like I'm working on a viewer mail thing and it's just not gelling.
Yeah.
Maybe you should practice a little bit before we're on the air. But
yeah, so you guys actually don't know this question.
He's
so
more slide whistle.
You guys are gonna have to think on your feet. But so this is viewer mail from a new guy, Nate Carlos, who's awesome. We all know him. He shops at our store.
Yep.
And he says, hey guys, first I'd like to say how much I dig the podcast. Well, thank you very much, Nate.
Yeah, you're beautiful.
That's sweet.
It makes my drive to work somewhat more bearable.
Oh, poor guy.
Yeah, he must have a really terrible drive to work. Well, it is Washington, D.C.
So
on to the question. From talking to you guys at the store, I've been able to somewhat gather what the tastes of each of you are like. But I was wondering if you guys could name some of your favorite comics out there. He says, I guess this is a cheap way of asking for recommendations. It seems like a really complicated way to ask. I mean, he could just ask us, but that's okay. So they don't have to be recent or easy to find or anything. That's what eBay and backbins were invented for.
All right, let's totally recommend stuff that will not help our business in any way and that we cannot provide for you.
Yeah, just like all out-of-print books.
All right, Nth Man by Larry Hama, 12-issue miniseries by Marvel from the early 90s.
All right, come on, let's be serious about
this. You can get Nth Man actually really cheap.
It's like $1. A set for like less than $1 each.
All right, so what are some of your favorite comics out there? We'll start with Nick.
All right, one of my favorite comics. Well, I guess Scalped is always my favorite.
Scalped Nick always is always a big fan.
I will
of Scalped.
Add in that thanks to Nick's recommendation, I finally caught up on Scalped, and I will second that as an amazing comic.
It's so good. Oh my god,
Scalped is good. Jared, what are you going to say is your favorite right now?
Right now, I'm going to go with an older one that I haven't mentioned in a while. It's Hicksville. standalone graphic novel that's astounding.
It's good times.
Yeah, yeah. Nick, why don't you do that? Why don't you give like an older one that people might not know about? Everybody knows you like Scalped.
Oh my God. An older one that people might not know. I don't know. I really like the Mystique comics by Brian K. Vaughan.
That's a good one. And those are about to come out in trade paperback.
They're really good. Yeah, they came out recently.
Or they just recently came out.
They re-released them. Yeah, they're really good.
But yeah, it's like Brian K. Vaughan writing a spy thriller with Mystique as a shape changing spy assassin or whatever.
Yeah, and her sidekick's like a tiny man.
Oh yeah,
not like a little person, but like a tiny man that's like the size of a doll, like an action figure.
Yeah,
it's pretty awesome.
I'm gonna go with Cerebus. I mean, Cerebus had its day, and everybody kind of knew about it, but I feel like it's kind of fading away a little bit.
That's true.
I feel like people should still know about it, especially Cerebus volumes 2, 3, and 4, which are High Society 1 and 2 and Church and State. Those are both fantastic.
It's actually High Society 1 and Church and State 1 and 2.
That's true. That's correct. But so I think that's it. He put a little PS on here, and I thought this was worth mentioning. He said, "Are you guys going to order La Mano del Destiny 2 through 6?" I read the first issue and loved it. The thing is, in the back of that first issue, the guy basically says that the rest of the comics aren't really going to be available for order. So for stores, if you want them, I think you're going to have to order them directly from him.
Nope. Yeah.
We should try to get some of them.
We are going
to
get them.
Are we?
I have declared as a big Planet Eve person. For a little more insider thing, for people who don't understand what that means, is like, Diamond, who's the main distributor for comics, has a cutoff point where if you do not sell enough, either in volume or price, so if you don't make, like, say, $1,000 or move 1,000 copies of your book, they'll say you're just not worth the amount of trouble it is to carry.
I think it's like $2,500 retail.
Yeah, so there's a basic, like, a plateau they put on for that stuff. So unfortunately, a few years ago, a lot of small stuff got dropped from the catalog, and this is one that apparently just didn't make the sales point, but was very good.
Yeah, and it's like a $3 book, so I mean, you have to move a lot of copies. But so you say we're gonna try to get copies for the store from that guy?
I think we will, because the first one was really fun.
Yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4. Jared declares a thumb war against Diamond.
Well, yeah.
I win.
Please don't listen to this, Diamond.
Maybe that
you control our fate.
Maybe that dude will be SBX and get him directly from him.
Maybe he will. We don't know that for sure, though, so I wouldn't be throwing that out there.
Yeah,
we'll find out.
All right, so
you should know.
We definitely appreciate the question from Nate. It's pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah, and to follow up on that, if you guys are looking for something, we will try to get it.
That's true. Yeah,
that's what we do at Big Play.
We are a store.
Also, yes. Nate, next time I see you, let me know what you thought about Captain America.
The movie?
Yeah.
Oh, is he going to see it?
Yeah, me and him always talk about movies.
You shouldn't tell people where he is. Now they're going to be able to find him.
What? I don't tell him where he is.
I like that everyone who writes in are basically giving away lots of personal information.
I thought he's just been at Captain America since the last time you saw him.
No, I just said, next time I see you, let me know what you think.
That sounds really creepy.
So if you guys want to ask us a question.
I didn't ask him what he was wearing.
Just email it to, all right, come on, let's do this. I feel like you guys are pretty unruly tonight.
Yeah.
I'm trying to run a podcast here.
We're trying to help.
All right. Anyway, if you guys want to send in a question, as Nate did, as many of our other listeners have, send it to podcast@bigplanetcomics.com and we'll read it on the air. It's definitely one of our favorite parts of doing this.
It's always fun.
Yeah. All right. So this is going pretty fast, but that's all right. They don't all have to be like an hour and a half long.
No.
But now Nate's going to be like, man, the rest of my drive is lame because I finished listening to this podcast so quickly.
Next time, tell us, Nate, how long your drive is. Yeah, we'll make sure the podcast is at least that long.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. We can do some like karaoke at the end or something like that. All right. So let's move.
Oh my God. That'd be so good.
You would love that.
Oh, there are plenty of comic book songs we could do karaoke for.
Yeah, but we might get sued.
Dibs on no diggity.
I don't think that's a comic book song.
What comic is that in reference to?
I don't know.
Yeah,
I would read that comic.
All right, let's move on to reviews.
Yep.
We love comics, they're swell, except when they're written by Scott Lobdell. I prefer important books like Louis Riel. It's time for reviews.
That still makes me laugh. I'm going to change it at some point. But
I love that we have a weekly jingle that makes fun of Scott Lobdell.
I know. All right, so let's get right into this. We'll start with something that probably a lot of people have already read, but we just want to let people know that there's a new edition out there, which is The Blanket Softcover by Craig Thompson.
Well, going back to your point you just made about Cerebus, I think the problem is that so many good things are now coming out, especially in trade paperback collected form or as just standalone graphic novels. It's hard to keep track of stuff, and it's easy to forget about things. And this was definitely, was it 2000 that this came out or 2000?
Yeah, I completely forgot.
I think it was more like 2004. Yeah, because I actually got a copy at SPX when I first moved up here, and that was around 2004. Yeah. So,
but yeah, this is still like one of the most acclaimed graphic novels of all time. Was it the first one to break the 600-page boundary?
I don't know that that's true. It might be. I'm not sure, but definitely Blankets has become a good introductory comic for a lot of people that maybe aren't as into comics, and definitely people who aren't interested in superhero comics.
True.
And it's kind of a coming of age story with beautiful art.
Really, really good art.
And it's something that everybody should read, I think. It's a little bit precious, a little bit twee, maybe, but all in all, I think it's a really great graphic novel.
Yeah, yeah. I should probably read it.
Oh, wow. You're killing me.
Oh, wow. I can't believe it. Well, now there's a new edition. You can read it, and it's beautiful.
New edition? I'll read something about new edition.
It's not about new edition.
Is it about blankets?
Speaking of new edition, I just heard that Bobby Brown is going to be on Celebrity Big Brother in the UK.
Oh, my God.
Is he British?
No, but that doesn't matter.
I'm just checking. I didn't know Big Brother could reach out to
other nationalities. Wait, is it a comic about blankets or what is it about? I don't even know.
Well, no, it's a coming of age story. Yeah, it's mostly about Craig Thompson being a teenager.
Yeah, it's pretty autobiographical. I won't say completely, but it's definitely that implication.
And it's very internal. I mean, it's not very plot driven. It's very much just about sort of, you know, like how he feels.
But yeah, that one of the things that's really appealing about it is that since he did it as this huge novel that he worked on for so long that he had the time to do like single pages that were just beautiful artistic pieces rather than having to fill them up with like lots of panels to tell his story. So he had the space to really let the story breathe and do some really great art.
Cool.
And his new book's coming out in September, I believe. Yep. It's called The BB, and I think it's going to hit about the 700 page mark as well.
Yeah, this is one where he went down to Morocco on a kind of artistic sabbatical, and he's been inspired by that and been working on it for long time now, 5 years, 6 years.
Yeah, maybe even longer than that. But I've seen pages from it. It's beautiful.
Excellent.
Yeah. So that's Blankets. Moving on to another thing. It's a collection of something that maybe a lot of people have read before, but it's a pretty sweet edition. So we're talking about it. The Echo Complete Edition Softcover by Terry Moore. Jared, can you tell people what Echo is about?
Not really. It's kind of confusing. Well, I'm just saying it's a confusing story.
Well, it starts off with like a girl wandering through the desert, and it starts raining like metal pieces, and they start bonding to her skin. And she kind of gets weird powers from it, and also the memories of somebody who's related to the pieces of metal. It's kind of a mystery thing, so
science fiction tinged mystery. Yeah.
It's hard not to give too much away.
But. Yeah, it's definitely the kind of thing you don't want to give a lot away about because there are a lot of twists and turns in the story. But that's the basics of the beginning, and then of course it expands. It becomes a lot more than that.
Yeah.
But this edition, I think it's $30, which is really nice.
I think it's $40.
$39.99.
Right. That's $30.
But yeah, that's that's all six trades of the entire series. So what, 36 ish issues or whatever?
Definitely a bargain.
$40 is ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah. It's a good deal. And if you want to just get a big full story, I should say Terry Moore is, of course, famous for Strangers in Paradise.
Yep.
So if you guys have read that or his new series, Rachel Rising, if you read the first issue of that and you liked it, definitely check this out. It's sci-fi, but it's very character driven. It's good stuff.
Yeah. This is like a limited edition too, but
right.
I feel like they should keep this going on.
Well, they should, but that doesn't mean.
Yeah, that's the problem with comics is often they'll do a great idea and then it'll go out of print.
All right, so moving on to let's see, what should we talk about here? Let's talk about New Avengers 15.
Oh my God, Squirrel Girl!
It was so good. New Avengers. this is a Fear Itself tie-in issue. It was written by Brian Michael Bendis and drawn by Mike Diodato. Who I haven't always been a big fan of Diodato, but I feel like his work in the last couple of years has been really good.
So good.
Yeah, yeah. So this issue, usually we wouldn't just talk about like a random issue of New Avengers, but this one focuses on Squirrel Girl, who is now Luke Cage's nanny.
Well, not Luke Cage's nanny.
Not Luke Cage's nanny. Luke Cage and is it Jessica Jones? Is that her name?
Yeah. Yeah.
Their daughter. She's their the nanny.
Baby girl.
Yeah. Yeah. This is the issue where they make Squirrel Girl into kind of a badass.
Nope.
Yeah.
This is where they show again that Squirrel Girl is a badass.
Yeah, because there was an issue where she like took down Dr. Doom.
Or was it Galactus? I think it was both.
And Thanos.
It was Thanos. Both. And Dr. Doom.
Yeah.
I don't. Maybe not Galactus.
No, I don't know about Galactus.
She might have.
Galactus is pretty big.
Yeah.
But one thing I'll say about this is even if you don't read the Avengers comics, even if you're not reading Fear Itself, this is such a self-contained good story.
Yeah, it's a little standalone.
I mean, it features elements from this giant crossover, but it's so not what it's about.
No.
It's about... a woman finding a kind of motherly instinct inside of her that she didn't really know she had and sort of it turning her into somebody more powerful than maybe
yeah,
she
it's
thought
like
she
her instinct to protect this baby no matter what.
Yeah, and she beats awesome. And she beats up Wolverine in it.
Yep.
Yes, she does.
And yeah. It's really good. It's really well written. I mean, a lot of people complain about Bendis, say he's too decompressed, but I think sometimes his work is nuanced in a way that's really cool, and I think that happens in this issue.
Yeah, they continue that kind of interview thing that they've been doing in Avengers where she's like, why am I getting interviewed?
You know, yeah, true.
And also, spoiler alert, somebody gets eaten by squirrels in this issue.
That's, yeah.
A lot of squirrels in this.
Yeah, there are definitely squirrels in it. All right, so I think we all like New Avengers. I mean, Jared, you haven't even been reading it, but you
yeah,
like
yeah, this
issue,
was
right?
The first one I've read in the last few issues I've missed, and it stands alone pretty well, and it was very fun.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that, yeah. So let's move on to something else. I'm having trouble deciding what our pick is, but I think I got it.
We can all discuss at the end.
We can, but I'm going to leave one for last that I think we all really liked. So let's move on to the Hocus Pocus graphic novel.
It's pretty sweet.
It is pretty sweet. This is by I'm going to let Jared read this because he's taking French. So
sacre bleu. By Sylvie Desrosiers and Rémi Simard.
That's what I was going to say.
Ouais.
So, Jared, you read this, right?
Yep.
Can you tell people what it's about?
It's basically this is written for very young readers. It's an extremely cartoony style, really, really good art. It's basically like kind of almost a classic Looney Tunes adventure where you've got, you know, the interaction of a rabbit and a dog who live in a house together, you know, are obviously pets of someone, and their hijinks where they do not get along with each other very well. That's pretty much it, right?
That's pretty much it, yeah. And it's a kind of a series of, yeah, it's very Looney Tunes in that there's like a series of, you know, attempts to get these carrots or whatever that go wrong. It reminded me a lot of Presto, if you guys have seen that. It was a short film that was before one of the Pixar movies. Thing,
yeah.
Yeah, but I thought it was fun. I mean, obviously, if you're an older reader, the art's fun. It's not like super outstanding or anything, but I think for little kids, it's a great book.
Yeah, it's very confusing and nuanced. I didn't know what was going on in it.
Did you not?
No. I was like, why is this rabbit being chased by this dog? I don't understand.
A lot of multiple layers.
Why does he want carrots?
Storytelling. Yeah.
Why does this rabbit
want carrots? What does carrots symbolize?
Yeah. What do these carrots mean?
What does the dog represent in humanity?
I think they represented dinner. The carrots.
For the dog?
No, for the rabbit.
Just blew my mind.
Oh. Yeah. Nick, you're being an idiot.
I'm not being.
All right. So let's move on. To The Many Adventures of Miranda Mercury hardcover. This was put out by Arkea. This is by Brandon Thomas and Lee Ferguson. There was one issue of this that came out about a year, maybe 2 years ago.
3 years ago.
It's been a long time.
And it was pretty interesting because it came out and it was The Adventures of Miranda Mercury number 295. And it was kind of this standalone story that was very fun. Now for me, so this is now a hardcover. It's probably about 160 pages or something.
I think
like
it's about the equivalent of six issues. So this is like, if that issue was 295, this is 295 through 300 or so, or they do treat it like these are
something
six
like that, yeah.
Continuous issues.
And the gist of it is that Miranda Mercury is a science hero and she knows that she's going to die and she wants to do as much as she can before it happens, basically.
She's from a family of science heroes.
And she's from a family of science heroes. And I actually felt like as a standalone story, the single issue that came out, I enjoyed that a little more than I enjoyed this longer form graphic novel. It's not that I thought it was bad.
Was that first issue the first part of this book?
It was. So long. Okay. Yeah.
Sort of. There's a little bit of an intro that's like supposedly from Miranda Mercury issue one.
Right. Where she's 10 years old.
Yeah. And she's first becoming a hero. Right.
But what did you guys think of it?
I thought it was good. I didn't completely finish it because I ran out of time. But
well, there was a lot of stuff this week. There were a lot of graphic novels.
Yeah. But it was like, there's a lot of crazy, really cool ideas. Like, I mean, even the first thing that was about like kind of a Rubik's cube that held like a Ronin that could grant you wishes. And then the second storyline was, I don't know, it was even crazier. It just got crazier and crazier as it went along.
Yeah, I think it was almost too much for me when I was reading it all at once because it's such an action-based series. And it's like a lot of action mixed with like a lot of crazy ideas.
Yeah.
In a way, it reminds me a little bit of Tom Strong.
Yeah.
Maybe just because the costumes like look the same.
Yeah.
But like Invincible a little bit, where it's that kind of big cosmic thing where there's a lot of characters and a lot of stuff going on. But yeah, again, I don't know if it read so well as a single book.
Yeah, I feel like it's the kind of thing like where if you most things you would recommend, just sit down in one sitting and read through this graphic novel. But I think this is the kind of thing where you would almost be better served to like read an issue, come back a couple days later and read another one.
Yeah, I think if this had come out as a monthly series, I think it would have been a little bit stronger.
Yeah, and I don't know why they changed it to this way. I mean, in the back of the first one, it seemed like they were going to do more issues, and I don't really know what happened with that. RK is a weird publisher, though. They do strange things from time to time.
Yeah.
So, but overall, I mean, it seems like Nick liked it a good bit. We all liked it. It was just, for me, not like a good graphic novel. It was more like a series of stories.
Yeah.
It was like when you read a comic strip collection and you're like, okay, you know, I don't really need to read 100 of these all at once.
Yeah. Also, the art's like a little uneven. I can't tell if like the issue that came out, like the first issue that came out, the art's great, but it's different almost every story. I don't know if that's intentional or not because they're, you know, jumping around through issues. Like one's like issue 125 and one's issue 1. So maybe it's intentional, but
I don't think it's intentional.
Yeah, I don't know.
But I will say that one thing the art has going for it the whole way through is that it's very energetic.
Yeah.
Which is a hard thing to pull off in comics. Definitely, and I think that Lee Ferguson does a good job with that. All right, so moving on to what should we talk about next? Let's talk about New Mutants number 29. I just read this. This is by Lanning and Abnett, the guys that have been writing all the cosmic stuff for Marvel.
And yep. Legion of Superheroes for a really long time.
And Heroes for Hire.
Yeah, yep. And this is drawn by David LaFuente, who's one of my favorite artists. He drew he drew Ultimate Spider-Man when it relaunched the last time.
Yeah.
And he's drawn various other...
He drew Hellcat.
Yeah, he drew Hellcat with Catherine Eminem, and that was great. So, Nick, why don't you tell people what this issue of New Mutants is about?
Well, it's a Fear Itself tie-in. Surprise.
Every Marvel book.
Yeah.
But basically, it's about... Danny Moonstar has a connection to the Asgardians, so Cyclops sends her to get some help to deal with Juggernaut and stuff like that. And she kind of goes down, and then they all have to go to hell to save her.
Yeah.
But... Oh my god, the art is so good. That's the only reason I read this. I was like, I looked at the cover and I was like, oh my god, is that David LaFuente? And I just like read it instantly.
Well, I will say I gravitated toward this because of the art. I mean, I don't typically read New Mutants. Have Lanning and Abnett been writing it the whole time?
They wrote it for a few issues, like 3 or 4 issues ago. And I wish I'd started earlier because I love them. I mean, I love all the Annihilation stuff, and I love Heroes for Hire is great.
But it was definitely LaFuente's art that made me want to read this. But as I was reading it, it felt very... It had that kind of old school, it reminded me of the old New Teen Titans comics.
Yeah.
Where it's just like this team who sort of exist on their own and maybe are part of a larger world, but kind of have their own thing going on. And they're like going on this crazy, crazy adventure. And just the way it read, it was a lot of fun. I felt like it was really easy to get into, even though it's issue 29.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's really funny. I don't really know the characters a lot.
It's a lot like the old New Mutants.
That's
you know?
What I was thinking. Like, I have not read recent New Mutants since, this is probably the first issue I've read of this current series. Yeah. But I read some of the older ones, and it's a lot of the older characters from that. And it kind of had that feel of like, these are young heroes who are, like you said, on their own team doing their own thing. I thought they were characterized pretty well and definitely recognized the feel. I'm like, this guy's back. And, yeah,
it's cool.
And I will emphasize the art is it's beautiful. I love it so much.
Yeah, but really, I thought the story was good too. Not you know, the art was amazing, but you know, it was compelling. They had some cool Marvel universe twist and stuff of what's going on in the bigger thing, but also then this I thought the twist at the end was amazing.
Yeah, which we won't tell you what it is, but it was very cool.
Yeah.
Also another Fear Itself tie-in that you don't have to read Fear Itself or anything else to
I feel like that's fair. And I'd say if you're a fan of the Thor books, this is a great
Yeah, this is very Asgardian themed.
I love the character of Hela, who I guess is the leader of Hell. I guess
I don't know Hell with one L.
But her design is such that you can never draw her without her looking like she's drawn by Jack Kirby.
I was about to say it's very Kirby esque.
Yeah, which I think is awesome.
It's impossible. Yeah.
So, but no, it's very cool. Yeah, it's definitely worth checking out. All right, so let's move on to what are we going to talk about here? This is maybe my pick of the week, but let's just talk about it. This is Forming Volume 1. This is a hardcover by Jesse Moynihan.
Forming.
I knew this was your pick of the week.
And this is from a British boutique publisher called No Brow Press. They do a lot of really beautiful books. This is the first thing that we have in our store. Our Bethesda store has a lot of stuff. But Nick, why don't you tell people what Forming is about? I'm
please,
saddling you with this. This
please
is a,
summarize
yeah,
for
it's
us,
it's
Nick.
A crazy.
All right, I'm going to try to do this. It's really weird, first of all, but it's about a bunch of aliens that come to Earth. During I don't know like 9,000 or 10,000 BC or something,
prehistory basically,
right? Yeah, basically they come and they meet like Adam and Eve, and Noah's in this. It's weird. There's like biblical characters in it, but they're all kind of like it's hard to explain without getting really graphic. But the aliens have sex with Adam and Eve, and they create different beings, and the children they create are weird mutants with powers, and they all kind of fight each other. And
the children basically seem to be part of a prophecy that they're going to stop the alien invasion and rise up against their father.
Yeah.
But there's so much other stuff going on. It's really a hard book to explain. But I will say the art is beautiful. It's very colorful. It's the color palette reminds me a lot of like Brendan McCarthy's work.
Who's the guy who did I Shall Destroy All the Civilized Planets?
Yeah, Fletcher Hanks.
It feels like Fletcher Hanks drawing a modern comic where he has like all the kind of alternative underground comics as an influence as opposed to just the superhero stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I will say it seems very influenced by somebody like CF who did the Power Masters series. Right. It definitely has a picture box feel to it. True. Like that kind of I don't like the sort of Fort Thunder school of cartooning, but I feel like it rises above all of that as well. Yeah. This is probably my favorite book of the year.
I mean,
but I like really weird stuff. So yeah.
If you want a good summary for it, there's a scene where Noah is meditating on a tree and a bird craps in his mouth. And then he starts seeing visions of like this crazy space god, and then there's a crazy fight with the space god. It's crazy. It's insane.
It's crazy. Yeah. And it definitely has to be seen to be believed.
Well, the thing I thought that was interesting about it is, like you said, it uses some like biblical references and stuff, but it uses a lot of references. There's references to like the creation of the Greek gods and how they had multiple levels of, you know, like descents from the Titans and going down to Zeus and stuff. So it seems like he took a lot of like biblical and mythological things and work them into like, this is how it really happened with aliens invading, and then there's another race of aliens and maybe a third race of aliens, and then like an alien space cop, and it's very complicated
and it's compelling. All mixed, but it's all mixed with a very sort of modern dialect, like
very much.
yeah, people, I mean, say yo.
yeah and it's, but it works, it all it works does. It seems like he spent a lot of time sort of creating this world, and I don't know, it's
awesome. Really messed up too.
It is really messed up.
Yeah. I would say like punk and like the coolest idea of punk ever. This is just like pure id pouring on the page in like an amazing, I'm doing something awesome way.
I think that's definitely true. So Forming for me is great, and everybody should at least flip through this book. It's not gonna be for everybody, that's
no,
for sure.
It's true.
It's definitely not gonna be for everybody. All right, so let's talk about Limit Break number one. This is a mini comic that we got in. It's by Andy Kettler, who's a longtime customer at our store. And his art is amazing. It's very reminiscent of guys like Taiyo Matsumoto and Mobius and Brandon Graham and James Stocco. You guys both read this. Nick, why don't you tell people what Limit Break is about?
Some lofty names there, but yeah. Limit Break is about, I mean, it's pretty simple. It's about a guy who's going to his band rehearsal, and he gets a magic 20-sided die, and some crazy stuff starts happening, and yeah, that's about it.
Yeah, no,
it's,
I mean,
pretty simple.
Yeah, it's not a book that's heavy on story, but no. But the way it's done is great. The art's fantastic, and
it's heavy on atmosphere.
It's definitely heavy on atmosphere. It's very reminiscent of, I'd say, Tekken Concrete, by Taiyo Matsumoto, which I know is a big influence on Andy.
Yeah.
We should get Andy on here at some point and like interview him about Limit Break. That might be fun.
That would be fun.
Yeah, but I will just say I recommend this book to anybody. It's awesome. It's a lot of fun, and
you can pretty much only get it from him or from us.
Yeah, at this point. Yeah, and we're getting a lot more copies in, and I should say pretty soon Limit Break is going to be serialized on the Big Planet Comics webpage.
Maybe
I talked to him today.
Yes. Oh, awesome.
So we're gonna be putting up a page every week starting pretty soon. I'll let you guys know more about that when I know a little bit more, but so look forward to that.
Sweet. That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's good news.
Yeah, check out Limit Break. It should be at all the Big Planet Comics stores pretty soon. But all right, moving on to, well, there's not much left, so let's talk about these Amazing Spider-Man books that came out this week. There was basic Spider Island's just starting up. Yep. Spider-Man 667 was the first part, so let's talk about that a little bit. I should say
the first official part.
Yeah, basically 666 was the first part, but this is called part one. This is by Dan Slott, who's been writing it, and Humberto Ramos, who's the artist now on this storyline. And Nick, why don't you tell people what Spider Island is a little bit, and maybe what this issue was about.
Well, I guess it's pretty simple, actually. The Jackal, who's an old Spider-Man villain who you might remember from the Amazing Clone Saga.
Yeah, that's what I know him from.
There's a lot of clone-related jokes in this. And basically, it's a Jackal. It's kind of timely, actually, because he infects a bunch of bed bugs, which are around a lot in New York.
Yeah.
And he kind of makes these bed bugs that give people spider powers. And so everybody around the city is getting spider powers.
He really transmits spider powers by bed bugs?
Yep.
I completely missed that.
Is genetically that engineered happened? Bed bugs.
Well, clearly. Yeah, were they radioactive?
Maybe. I don't know.
I hope so.
But anyway, like people start getting spider powers, and the Jackal brings together a bunch of gangs, and he's given all the gang members like spider powers, and they're just, he creates a giant gang war.
And he gives them all Spider-Man costumes.
Oh, yeah, that's right. The best part. He gives them all various Spider-Man costumes. There's it's pretty funny, like, when you see all these gangsters fighting each other. Some of them are dressed like Ben Reilly.
And some are like the Iron Spider. That was like the Iron Man suit. And some have like the new stealth costume that was in Marvel vs. Capcom 3. And
yeah, they have all of it. It's really funny. But yeah, and then the Avengers show up and crazy stuff happens.
Yeah, and the whole issue is really funny. I mean, it's got that sort of tone that Spider-Man comics have had for a while now, which is just like a lot of fun.
It's great.
Not too serious. And Peter Parker doing his thing, you know, almost getting caught and, you know, getting in trouble.
There's a really funny inversion at the beginning where he's like, it looks like he's standing on the ceiling and he's like, and his girlfriend's on the ground and she's like, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening. And he's like, oh, and then it flips over and he's like on the ground and she's on the ceiling. She's like, I got spider powers.
Yeah. It's crazy. It's pretty awesome. So Also, two of the spinoff books from Spider Island came out this week.
Because this is an event, they're going to be doing a lot of spinoff books.
So I'm going to talk about my... Let's talk about the one that's not as good first, and then we'll talk about the one that's absolutely amazing. So the first one is Spider Island Deadly Foes number one. This is a one-shot. It's written by Dan Slott and Christos Gage, the first story, which focuses on the Hobgoblin.
Yeah.
And then the second story is written by Fred Van Lent, and that one focuses on Jackal.
Yeah. Well, I thought the first Hobgoblin one was actually pretty entertaining. I mean, it's just, you know, a villain story point from his, you know, how things are going in his eyes and stuff. But I thought it was kind of cool to see how he reacted to stuff. And much like Peter Parker rather than Spider-Man, he's always, you know, things aren't quite working out for him. He's got grandiose schemes that are constantly backfiring. And
it's true. He's very much a Peter Parker analog, except the way he handles it is obviously a lot different because he's kind of insane. And this is the Hobgoblin who was a hero for a while, right?
Yeah, he was a Green Goblin for a while who was a hero who had his own series actually for, I don't know, like 20 issues or so. He was in Loners. I don't know if you read that.
Yeah, sure.
But this is like, you know, he decided, he's like, oh, whatever, I'll just be a villain. Nothing worked out when nothing worked out when I was a hero, so might as well just do this. And he goes full throttle with it.
Yeah, and I thought the story was okay.
Yeah,
and
it was fun.
And then there was the second story.
Ah, now this one was worth talking about.
Jared and I we both read this today, and then we were talking about it, and we were like, Nick would know about this.
Right?
So, like, the Jackal has a clone of Gwen Stacy. I guess, is that a thing from an older comic?
Clones of Gwen Stacy?
Well, yeah, there were clones of Gwen Stacy during the Clone Saga at some point. But this one, the funniest thing is, like, when she's like, oh, I have a strain of the Carrion virus or something like that or whatever. But it's like, oh, Carrion, that's another Spider-Man villain or whatever.
Oh, really?
But yeah, I have no idea what they were talking about. It was bananas.
Yeah, Carrion's from the whole, like, when there were, like, all of these different kinds of venoms kind of thing, right?
No. Carrion was, like, he was just, like, a shriveled up old dude with, like, a cloak.
that doesn't sound very dangerous.
You're running out of villains.
But he sounds like a flasher.
But he, like, he touched people and made them, like,
he touched people.
Yeah, he touched people and made them, like, basically, it's like they were starving or whatever. Like, he just made them, like, emaciated and weird. And,
oh, like the character Hunger from the X-Men, like
War Horsemen of the Apocalypse.
Well, no, there was I think there was, like, an X-Men like charity comic from the 80s where there was a character named Hunger who, like, made people hungry or something.
Oh, that's terrible.
Probably. But anyway, so I didn't think this was that great. It was kind of a throwaway.
Yeah, it was okay.
If you're a big Spider-Man fan, I guess it's worth checking out. But
the weird thing about it is, like, that second story with Jackal, like, it seems sort of important because there was a big Grim Hunt storyline a while back in Spider-Man. And at the end of it, like, Kane comes out of the ground and he's, like, got, like, spider eyes. And this explains what happens to them after that. And between that and Spider Island, what happened to him? about Kane.
That is stuff.
Which is very, very weird. Yeah, but yeah.
The one thing I just want to say about this is it was like one of those car crashes where you can't turn away from watching. The second story, anyway. Like I said, the first one was kind of fun. But they draw a certain character who is very emaciated. I don't want to spoil too much for anybody. But this is a female. And although she is very old and shriveled up, she still has an amazing body, which I just thought was so typically awfully comic booky. So.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, even if you're going to draw, like, a shriveled old lady, you have to draw her, like, posing like Pamela Anderson or something when you're doing superhero comics.
It was ridiculous.
Which is kind of what's wrong with superhero comics. But
I agree.
Whatever. But moving on to another comic that... was a spinoff of the Spider Island thing and also features a scantily clad woman, but is amazing. It's Spider Island Cloak and Dagger number one. Oh. This is written by Nick Spencer, who we're big fans of Nick Spencer out here on the Big Planet Comics podcast. He writes Morning Glories. He's been writing Thunder Agents and he's doing Infinite Vacation.
Iron Man 2.0.
Iron Man 2.0. He does good stuff.
Existence
and
2.0.
And this is, no, he didn't. Oh yeah. He did do Existence 2.0. Yeah. And the Forgotten. I think it was called
Forgetless.
Yeah. Yeah. So he does awesome stuff, and this is drawn by Emma Rios, who is, I feel like Emma Rios is unfortunately not a very well-known artist.
And what has she done?
She did the Osborne miniseries.
She did a Firestar one-shot.
That one was really good.
And then it seems like she does fill-in issues. She does a lot of stuff where they do, like, those sort of, like, the heroic age thing where they're, like, 10 stories that are going over a miniseries, and she'll
do, like,
one
a
of
short
them.
Story or whatever.
But her art style is fantastic.
It's so good.
And, Nick, I know you love this. Why don't you tell people about this Cloak and Dagger book?
Well, I mean, if you don't know who Cloak and Dagger are, Cloak is a guy with a cloak, and Dagger is a girl that shoots daggers. But
Cloak has transportation or teleportation powers.
But their origins are pretty, very, like,
they're one of the best origin stories.
It's very, like, 70s, 80s Marvel, like, where they're all kind of drug related. Like,
Jared, why don't you tell people the origin of? I can tell you're chomping at the bit. Tell people the origin.
Isn't the origin story that they get shot up with drugs and become superheroes.
Yeah, basically.
Like the worst like moral lesson ever.
Yeah, basically there was like a drug that the people were testing out to sell on the streets called D-Light. And they like they took these orphans and they injected them with them, and for some reason it made it so that he could he's got the D and she's got the light, I guess, right? Like
Yeah.
It's really cheesy. But yeah, so she shoots these sort of
But everybody else died. And they forced them to do this. It wasn't like they volunteered for this.
Yeah, well, I don't think orphans volunteer for anything.
No.
Except for families.
Yeah, except for food.
But yeah, except for more gruel.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Cloak can throw these sort of light daggers, and Dagger can throw these light daggers, and yeah, because their name's Dagger.
Yeah, yeah.
And Cloak has a cloak, and he teleports.
And he teleports people. Yeah.
And so this issue is kind of about Spider Island happening all around them,
but it's very grounded.
It is very grounded because it's about their longtime base, which is like this old cathedral, yeah, being shut down by the New York Department of. Something districting or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Of screwing over
because they don't have a second exit in the back.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think it's all really well done, and it's all sort of it's told with a dual narration, like half by Cloak and half by Dagger, kind of reminiscent of the early Superman Batman issues.
Right. Yeah, it's really good,
and it's very cool. The art's great, and
there's an interesting little hook at the end too.
Yeah, I think the whole thing is great. I like their relationship that Cloak is very jealous. And seems to sort of want a romantic relationship.
Well, they're on again, off again, kind of romantic.
Yeah, and she seems kind of tired of it, and she kind of wants a little normalcy in her life. It's weird. It's the kind of thing that Nick Spencer's really good at, and and Emma Rios. I mean, she delivers. Her art is, I'd say, kind of manga influenced
a little bit. Yeah,
but it's a thing of its own as well, and it's fantastic. I think we all loved it, right?
Yeah, yeah. This may be the best thing that came out this week.
And like we were saying earlier about. The new Avengers and new mutants. You don't really have to be reading Spider Island to understand what this is.
Yeah, I'd say almost this is Cloak and Dagger number one, which happens to be a Spider Island crossover rather than it being a Spider Island book.
And unfortunately, it's a miniseries, but I'd like to see something a little longer. But anyway, so moving on to Vertigo Resurrected Johnny Double number one. This is Brian Azzarello and Eduardo Risso, who of course are most famous for...
100 Bullets?
Flashpoint, Batman, Night of Vengeance?
Yeah.
I don't know which one. I mean, I guess
and,
right
now. Oh, man. I said it on the tip of my tongue. The Batman, Broken City?
Batman, Broken City, which wasn't the... But 100 Bullets is, of course, the big thing they're famous for. They've got a new series coming out called Spaceman that's starting pretty soon. And
so excited.
An 8-issue limited series.
So excited.
And, yeah, and they just finished up the Flashpoint, Batman, Night of Vengeance series, which... we've got differing opinions on Flashpoint here, but I think we can all agree that Batman Night of Vengeance was insanely crazy awesome.
It should have been in Elseworlds, and it would have been the greatest thing.
Yeah, and like I said last week, this is one of my favorite creative teams.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely. Everything they do is fantastic. And so this is a thing that I did, I think, the year before 100 Bullets started, or a year or two before 100 Bullets started. Jared, why don't you tell people what Johnny Double's about?
It was originally a 4-issue miniseries. This is another of their kind of DC or Presents or Vertigo Presents, where they take an old 4-issue set of stuff and do it in a new little book for only $8. So it's a really good bargain to start with.
Yeah, which
is
great, yeah.
But it's a straight up, you know, hard-boiled noir crime thing where there's this kind of washed up ex-cop who's now a really terrible private detective who can't even afford his own like office. So he just kind of lives in a bar and tries to get cases. And of course, he gets caught up with something and gets in way over his head.
Yeah, basically he gets caught up with this group of teenagers who's or maybe early 20s, but they're
youth.
They're trying to they're forging documents to steal money that's been left in Al Capone's bank account. That's supposedly been accruing interest. But then once they get the money, it's a lot more than they thought it was going to be, which means that somebody is actively using the account.
So they've actually stolen a huge amount of money from obviously someone who's a really set of bad news.
And from there, it's kind of people, you know, them trying to hide out, a lot of twists and turns.
It's like, whose money is this? Who's after them? Who's betrayed themselves? You know, can they trust each other with this money? It's the typical noir double, triple cross sort of thing.
Exactly. And it's really well done.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And it's great that you can get this. I mean, it's a 4-issue miniseries, right?
Yeah.
And it's for $8. Yeah. If you're a fan of 100 Bullets, if you're a fan of Criminal, if you like things like Incognito or...
Yeah, any of the Vertigo crime stuff.
Yeah, all the Vertigo crime, Last Days of American Crime. There's so many crime books coming out right now. But this is a really good one. I could easily see them having repackaged this as a Vertigo crime graphic novel and charging $20 for it. But
it's a really hefty read too. Like it's pretty dense.
It's dense. Yeah, yeah.
It's a very convoluted plot, but it's one of the ones very well thought out. Lots of twists and turns.
Yeah, it's
and
cool.
Foreshadowing. Yeah, yeah.
I'd say it's complicated and not convoluted for me. It's just
right.
Like,
sorry, that's what I'm trying to say. It's complex.
It's complex, but it doesn't seem forced. It doesn't seem stupid. Nope. It's really well done. And the main character of Johnny Double has a great personality. He reminds me of like a sort of Sam Spade. He's a little fed up with everything, but
But they kind of write him at, this is set in San Francisco, which is also a nice twist because you haven't seen much of that since Chinatown and like some of the older, not Chinatown, but
well, a Bullet, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you haven't seen that in many newer ones, I'll say. But they kind of write him as like an ex-hippie who has now become a private detective, which is an interesting take on everything.
Right. Like these kids are kind of railing against Haight-Ashbury, but he knew it as the birth of the counterculture. And they're like, maybe the birth of the over-the-counter culture. Yeah. But yeah.
But yeah, very well written.
It was awesome though.
Very well written and a very great deal for $8.
Yeah.
It's hard to pass up. $7.99. But all right, so moving on to, this is what I assumed was all of our picks for the week, but I'm not sure. This is The Bad Island trade paperback by Doug Ten Naple.
I'm not disagreeing with that.
You're not
statement.
Disagreeing? What about you, Nick?
It was so awesome.
Yeah. It's a very complex plot, but I'm going to let Nick try to explain it to you.
Well, first of all, this is Doug Ten Naple. If you don't know, he created Earthworm Jim.
Yep, and he did the video game The Skull Monkeys. He did Neverhood. He did a graphic novel called Gear, Creature Tech.
He's on like 12 or so.
Ghostopolis, right? He's done Black 9 Cherry. Or 10 trades. Yeah, he's done quite a few.
Monster Zoo. That's
Monster Zoo. They're not always, Tommy Source Rex was another one.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway.
They're almost always awesome.
They're almost but sometimes he gets a little preachy in his books, but
this is pretty straightforward.
This one's pretty straightforward. Anyway, I want to tell people what it's about.
Basically, it's about it's very like family-oriented thing. It's like a mother, father, son, daughter, and they're gonna go on a vacation, and the kids are kind of like, I don't want to go on this vacation, and it ends up they crash on an island, and the island may or may not be some crazy being or something
place. The twist to it, of course, is that do they start with the weird space stuff, or is that
the beginning of it is like there's these
introduction is that this crazy giant space battle robots and aliens and all kinds of weird stuff, and then we'll immediately after that cut back to this very normal family on Earth, and it kind of goes back and forth between these.
Yeah, it's definitely the beginning is a huge war, and then they start dealing with this family story of like this kid that wants to run away, and his dad is trying to take them on a vacation to sort of just bring the family closer together, and it's the kind of thing we say this a lot, but you don't want to give too much away about it.
It's very traditional though. It's very like, it feels like an animated movie. Like
it definitely feels like,
well, he's an animator. So I mean, it's kind of,
But the way he handles the family relationships is fantastic.
It's great.
The way he writes kids is great.
The jokes are so fun.
All the sort of monsters and crazy aliens and things in this are fantastic.
They're really cool. Yeah.
And the way he sets up the whole mystery and how the family sort of figures this out, all using their different strengths. It's just really well done.
And great characterization. Like Nick said, there's some really funny moments and some really funny humor.
There's the best use of a dead pet snake in this comic.
That's kind of a thing that runs through the whole thing. And anytime the dead pet snake of the young daughter shows up, it's pretty hilarious. Yep.
Yeah.
And it's I thought just a really well thought out, fun to read, easy to read. And I feel like this is a book that that anybody could read.
Yeah, I definitely give it 4 space alien thumbs up.
Yeah, yeah, I give it 5 dead snakes out of 5.
Excellent.
Yeah, so that was Bad Island. I think that was all our pick. That was our pick of the week for everybody, sure. Right?
Our pick of the week.
Well, okay, what was yours?
Jared has another.
I think that's my pick of the week, but I thought you said you had a favorite.
Forming is not for everybody,
right? But it is
me
your
personally.
Pick of
it's
the
my
week.
Pick of the week, but my recommendation of the week. There you go. Is Bad Island.
Yeah, I can't recommend Forming to anybody I know.
But you loved it too.
I loved it.
I can recommend Forming to a few people. I agree with Kevin. Everyone should look at it and see if it's for you or not, because it is amazing. But Bad Island, I think, is great for everyone.
Yeah.
So if you're one of those few people, check out Forming. If you're anybody, check out Bad Island. And if you're everybody in the entire world, don't forget to listen to the Big Planet Comics podcast. It comes out every week.
Beautiful.
All right.
We'll see you guys next time.
Goodbye.